Hi, I'm Dave Drewy, and this is Focal Point with Pastor Mike Fabares. And before we get started, I want to share about a resource we've picked out for you. When you get in touch, we'll send you a free booklet answering the question, was there really a Noah's Ark and flood? Ask for your free copy when you go to focalpointradio.org. Now here's today's edition of Focal Point. Filmmakers often make use of special effects, makeup, or digital techniques that make it look like something's happening on screen, even though it never happened in real life. Well, this kind of affectation is fun in film. But today on Focal Point, Pastor Mike Fabares explains how affectation in our spiritual lives can be an obstacle on the road to Christ. We're talking about when someone has an outward appearance of righteousness without an inward change of heart. So let's get ready for some self-reflection. Here's Pastor Mike.
Well, this was the year that my daughter wrapped up her sixth year, her sixth grade at the elementary school down the street. And about the time she was about to finish her sixth year there on campus, we got a call from the administration. And they said, hey, parents, I hate to tell you this, but your daughter's enrollment records are incomplete. We were like, enrollment records? Man, she'd been there for 6 years. She'd been through six teachers and 6 years of classes and grades and assemblies and field trips. And you're telling me her enrollment file's not even complete? No, well, sorry. She's missing some critical documents. And, you know, we got to have you provide those before we can promote her. And I thought, how crazy is that? To go all those years and never check my kid's file to see if she's actually enrolled in your school. I mean, she's gotten report cards, and she's done all the stuff, and she's gotten graded, and she's got all this history there, and you're telling me she was never enrolled? I thought, how terrible would it be to be told you're not enrolled after 6 years in school? And I thought, how much worse, though, would it be for us to be told we're not really enrolled in the family of God after years in church? After countless sermons, after volunteering in ministry, after doing all these things for all these years to get to the end of it and to find out we were never really in. Oh, Jesus wouldn't do that. Really, there it sits right there in the Bible. Matthew chapter 7, verse 21, and he says, many, not a couple, not a few, will say to me on that day, let me paraphrase for the sake of my illustration, teacher, teacher, did we not go to all the classes? Didn't we finish all the assignments? I mean, didn't we have the assemblies and the field trips? And we were there, we did it all. And he'll say, depart from me, you were never enrolled. Sorry. Few things would be more important than to settle that issue right there. And it's not a manufactured concern. It is the concern and forecast of Christ that you better make sure, because there's a lot of people that'll go through the motions of this and not be genuine. And so you better figure this out. And in our series on roadblocks to Christ here through Luke 11, I mean, we run into today one of the most insidious and most common roadblocks and barriers to people being enrolled in the family of God. And we've called it affectation. Affectation. Now, there's a word you probably didn't use much this week, but you should understand what it means. The word affectation comes from the word affect, and it is that some things in our lives, our words, our behaviors, our actions can leave an effect of something that's not actually real. It can leave the impression of something that really defies the reality that underlies it. Affectation. You see, as human beings, we are by nature people that are attracted to having an interest in affectation because, we want people to have the right impression. We don't want them to think wrongly, and so we figure out whatever the situation requires, and we make sure that we're not mistaken for some wrong kind of, attitude or wrong kind of qualification. So we learn what is acceptable and what is affecting people in the right way, and then we employ those things, and things work out. And when it comes to Christianity, it's the same way. Affectation is certainly something most people, they think about. Is this a Christianly thing to do? Is this a thing that Christians should say? Is this a place that Christians should go? And what would it be that God would want of Christians? And so we figure out what those things are, and they certainly give the impression of Christianity when people look at us, but sometimes they can defy the reality of it all. And I'll tell you, Jesus, when we look at the passage that we've run into today in Luke chapter 11, verses 37 through 42, you can clearly see by the urgency and even the severity of Jesus' words, he wants us to do the checking now. We don't want to get to the end of our lives and come graduation, find out you were never enrolled. He wants you to figure that out now. Check your files now. See if really we've got in line what God expects of those that will inherit the kingdom, and you'd better make sure. Like we've said throughout this series, it's not only about us looking at ourselves, but the whole point of Jesus giving us all these bad responses to Jesus, I mean, is for us to learn when we're bringing people to Christ that we don't fall into the patterns of really putting roadblocks in front of people that they stumble over. We want to make sure that we deal with the problem of affectation, and we say, well, wait a minute, I don't want to convert you just to the forms of Christianity. I really want to convert you to Christ, because there's a difference. There's a lot of people that are a part of the church, but they're not really a part of Christ. And so I don't just want to feel good that, hey, I finally got the guy going to church, and look, they're singing Christian songs, and they've stopped those bad non-Christian habits, and oh, okay, great, we've got a Christian on our hands. Don't be so sure. As Jesus points out here, he says you better make sure, because there's a lot of things that people associate with Christianity that really don't speak to real Christianity any more than my daughter showing up at class means she's enrolled. Take a look at this text if you haven't turned there already. Luke chapter 11, verses 37 through 42. When Jesus was done with this discussion about light and darkness and all that we just went through last time we were together, he says, Luke says, while Jesus was speaking, a Pharisee asked him to dine with him. Now, when you read the word Pharisee, we've got enough Sunday school information to immediately vilify that person in our mind, but it wasn't that way in the first century. I mean, if anyone had it right with God, it was the Pharisees. I mean, they were the super spirituals among them, and most people looked at them and said, well, if anyone's got a connection with God, it's those Pharisees. So you can picture someone that most people thought, well, here's a paragon of what it means to be godly. And he says, okay, Rabbi, okay, would-be Messiah, Jesus. I mean, a lot of talk about who you are, a lot of great wise teaching. Why don't you come and let's have a meal together? And so he goes, and he accommodates him. Verse 37, he, that is Jesus, went in and reclined at the table. Now the Pharisees, verse 38, the Pharisee, was astonished to see that he did not first wash before dinner. Well, you need to understand, if you don't already, that this has nothing to do with the Pharisees' concern about hygiene. This is not about you really should wash your hands before you eat. I mean, that's kind of gross that you didn't do it. Nothing to do with that. It was something that was done before a meal by those that made a claim to godliness to remind other people that they were clean before God. It's a lot like the Islamic practice of wudu, where they go before prayer time and they wash. If you've been in Islamic countries where they all pray, they have these places of washing with the basin and the seat and the water, and they go through all the steps of washing parts of their body, and then they can go in and pray. It was the practice of showing that I'm clean before God. So his concern wasn't hygiene. His concern was this religious ceremony, and anybody making a claim to godliness clearly does that. And Jesus just marches in and reclines at the table, and he's ready to eat, and he's like, what is he doing? The Lord said to him, obviously perceiving or seeing his astonishment, or maybe the Pharisee said something and it prompted this response from Jesus, verse 39. Now you Pharisees, you cleanse the outside of the cup and of the dish, but inside you're full of greed and wickedness. Now that's no way to treat your lunch host. Wow, that's kind of harsh. Why is Jesus so harsh? You see, Jesus is so harsh because he doesn't want you to get to the end of the life when the books are open and there's that book called the Lamb's Book of Life and your name not be found in it. Jesus unloads on this Pharisee. Look at the next words in verse 40. You fools, he castigates the whole lot of them. Why? So that you and I don't become this. So that you and I don't have all the impressions of godliness, but in reality, there's something inside that defies that affectation. You fools. Did not he who made the outside make the inside also? Now, this is an interesting, mysterious statement we'll untangle shortly. Verse 41. But give as alms those things that are within, and behold, everything is clean for you. But woe to you Pharisees. Now you've heard that, I know, but do you understand what it means? Woe, how dreadful for you Pharisees. How horrible it will be for you Pharisees. You tithe mint and rue, that's another spice from the Middle East. And every herb, you tithe from that. You give a tenth of that to God, but you neglect justice and the love of God. Now, these you ought to have done. You ought to have practiced justice and the love of God without neglecting the others. You ought to have the internals matching the externals. Verses 37 through 39, let's just start as we try to put you in the sandals of the first century, looking at the Pharisees as godly people. They have their practices, and here comes Jesus, and he's not engaging in those practices. And Jesus says, you know, it's not about that form of godliness. It's about the reality of godliness. Let's just think for a little bit about the forms of that godliness in our day. You've heard me preach. You've heard me use this phrase. We often look at people in terms of cultural Christianity. There are things that Christians do. There are things that Christians don't do. That's the culture of Christianity. And we need to be very careful about that because it can be deceptive. Number one on your outline, let's jot it down that way. We need to beware of cultural Christianity. Why? Because that cultural Christianity can pass for Christianity. And of course, Jesus is trying to give these very stern words to make sure you and I don't mistake the two. Now, note this carefully. It's not that Jesus is upset about this expression of their godliness. Now, I know this is an argument from silence, but you need to understand that Jesus doesn't seem to have a problem with some expressions that go beyond the text of Scripture. Now, there are some things in our cultural Christianity that are biblical, and that is what Scripture says. Like, if you're a Christian, you should go to church. Don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together, as is the habit of some. You ought to do that. You ought to go to church. So you meet someone you haven't seen for a long time. You're stopping at Starbucks on the way to church. They say, what are you doing? You say, I'm going to church. And they say, oh, okay, you must be a Christian. See, that's what Christians do. They go to church, and that's a biblical thing. But there are other things. Somebody pulls up and sees your Compass Bible Church bumper sticker. Now, that's not biblical. Pastor keeps harping about you having one. But, I mean, it's not a biblical thing. It's an extra-biblical thing. And they say, well, this guy must be a Christian. You're wearing your, you know, not of this world clothing line. Great. Nothing unbiblical about that. It's just extra biblical. It's not anti-biblical. It's just beyond. But it's one of the expressions in 21st century, and in our case, Orange County culture. It's what Christians do. And there's a set of things you won't do. And they'll ask you to do some things. You'll say, I don't do those things. Why? Because I'm a Christian. Well, those are expressions often that fall within the category of biblical things that create a Christian culture, and sometimes extra biblical things that create a Christian culture. And that's really not Christ's concern here. Why? Because it says in verse 39, the problem is, you got the outside looking one way, but the inside is radically different. Oh, you got the not of this world, but it sure looks like your life is all about this world. You see, there's a real distance between what you seem to be on the outside and what you proclaim on the outside and all this washing that you're all clean before God, but you're not clean before God. You're dirty before God because the interior of your life is dirty. And all I'm saying is because we look at each other's external life, and we can't possibly see what's going on in the interior of someone's life, you just got to be careful that we don't feel good about looking at our own lives and saying, well, I got the stuff in place. I serve at church. I give in the offering. I go to church. I express that I'm a Christian to the people around me. And we don't give attention to what's inside. Beware of cultural Christianity because those trappings can lead us to think we've got things going on the inside when there is no necessary tie between the two. Do you follow that? I mean, it's one thing to go to Anaheim and to go to a game and to buy a, you know, a flag or a pendant or a big foam finger and put a hat on and really not be an Angels fan. I mean, you're just going and friends invited you and thought it'd be cool to buy a red hat, and so there you are. See, with Christianity, it's no different. It's easy to invite people to church, and it happens that they happen to like it. And the principals are helpful, and their kids are improving in their lives, and they're less rebellious, and they're coming to the youth group, and hey, and they like it, and they're all a part of it, and they start putting bumper stickers on. They start singing Christian songs. They stop doing things that the world says, you know, do that. They say, no, I'm a Christian. I don't do that. Well, there's really no necessary tie between the two, but the culture can fool you. The affectation of Christian culture can leave an impression that's not necessarily the case. As Jesus put it over there in Matthew chapter 15, he says, you know, these people, they honor me with their lips. You know the rest of this verse? But their heart is where? It's far from me. They're drawing near to me with their behaviors on the externals of their lives, but where their heart is not even close. I'd like to turn you to an Old Testament passage, maybe hard to find. The book of Amos, one of the earliest writing prophets in the Old Testament. I say that in the period of the classical period of the prophets, where we start with the major prophets, minor prophets. This is a minor prophet, but in time, in chronology, it was early on when Israel in the north and Judah in the south, they're still both coexisting, And they're having trouble with their Assyrian foreign armies. And so here we've got people that are crying out to God in the book of Amos for God to intervene. Sennacherib, the leaders of the Assyrian army, and all the concerns about the coming of some kind of geopolitical threat, they're saying, oh God, if you just show up, oh God, if you'd be here, it would be great. Turn to chapter 5 and look at this little book of Amos. Amos is sent to the northern tribes of Israel to diagnose some problems with them, and here's what he says beginning in verse number 18. Amos chapter 5, verse 18. There it is again. Woe to you. What does that mean? How terrible it is for you. How disastrous it is for you. Why? What? Who desire the day of the Lord. Do you got your eyes on that text? Look at it. Amos 5, 18. Woe to you who desire the day of the Lord. And you're thinking this book is full of contradictions. Because isn't that what, I mean, I thought we were supposed to cry out Maranatha. I thought we're supposed to want God to show up and intervene. He's going, woe to you who desire the day of the Lord. Well, why is that? Because he's saying, why would you desire it? Why would you have the day of the Lord? It's darkness and not light. What are you talking about? Here are people claiming your name, going to their places of worship, bringing their sacrifices, and they're saying, we got threats on the borders of our country. God, we'd love for you to show up. The day of the Lord. We just wish God would show up here. Yeah, when God shows up, you're not going to like it. It's going to be darkness, not light. It's as if a man fled from a lion, verse 19. Okay, the Assyrian armies are going, God, we're going to run to you. Please help us. And you show up, and you made it away from the lion of the Assyrians, and a bear met you. Well, that's the bad day. You run into the house. You got danger outside. And you lean your hand against the wall. You think everything's cool now, and a snake bites you. Serpent bit him. What? Verse 20. Is not the day of the Lord darkness and not light? And gloom with no brightness in it at all? And I'm thinking, no. It's like my daughter can't wait for graduation. I can't wait to be on to junior high. I want to have the promotion ceremony, and it'll be great, and throw my hat in the air, and it'll be fun, and my mom and dad will take me out to my favorite restaurant. It'll be a great day. Oh, sorry, you were never enrolled here. No, it's going to be terrible. See, it's all about what's going on in the interior of your life, because they could look at the exterior of their life, and they're doing all the stuff they're supposed to do. Look at verse 21. And God says, you know what? I'm not liking what you're doing. Even though it's the biblical stuff, I hate, he says, and I despise your feasts. Well, it must have been some really horrific parties. They were going, no, these are religious feasts. This is the word for the festivals that God had ordained and instructed them to go to. I take no delight in your, there's the word, solemn or holy assemblies. Now, we're doing these meetings for you, God. What do you mean you don't like them? No, I hate them. Even though you offer me burnt offerings. Now, didn't you require those? And grain offerings, didn't you ask for those? I will not accept them, and the peace offerings of your fattened animals, I will not look upon them. Take away, as long as we're talking here, God says, take away from me the noise of your songs and the melody of your harps. I will not listen. Why? Why? Why are you rejecting your people? Why is it that when you show up, it's going to be a bad day for them? Well, here's the answer, verse 24. The gaping lack of symmetry between the externals of their life and the interior of their life. Here's how he puts it, verse 24. Let justice, that's the word of righteousness. Let righteousness, justice roll down like the waters. Let righteousness flow like an ever-flowing stream. You're missing those things. Oh, you're going through the motions of religiosity. You're going through the motions of Judaism. You're going through the motions of godliness. But your heart, I don't see much justice, much righteousness there. That's what you need to unleash in your life. And then you know what? When the Lord shows up, it'll be a good day for you. It will be light. It won't be gloom. See, this is the deception. As heavy as a sermon like this may feel to you, it is the deception that Christ so desperately wants you to avoid. He does not want this to be a reality for you. He doesn't want the books to be open and go, oh, nope, your name's not here. I guess you never got enrolled. I guess you were just a part of the culture of Christianity. And some people are so focused on that, aren't they? If you were to come over to my house and say, hey, let's hang out. I said, great, I want to serve you up some coffee. We don't drink it at my house, so I'm not very good at it. You can have some bad-tasting coffee at my house. Or I said, well, I'll make you some good hot chocolate or maybe some hot tea. And let's go over to my cupboard here and let's look at my mugs here. Choose a mug. Aren't they beautiful? Matter of fact, they're so beautiful, I want to put cabinets in my kitchen where they're just glass, where you can see them all the time. But I just want to warn you, when you pick out your mug, we never wash the inside of the cups. I don't think you'd be interested, no matter how good they looked on the outside. That's why he says, you guys are so interested in cleaning the outside of the cup and the dish, but you're not concerned about the inside. I'm concerned about the inside. And just because the mugs look so good on the outside, you're eager to go say, yes, that's a good mug. That's a good Christian. You're easy, quick to look in the mirror and say, I'm a good Christian. I'm doing all the stuff. And unfortunately, in our evangelism, sometimes we lean back satisfied that we've got a convert to Christianity, when in reality, we don't have a convert to Christ. Beware of cultural Christianity. It can woo people into thinking there's a reality in their lives when it's really nothing more than affectation. Number two, verses 40 and 41. Jesus says, you fools. Did not he who made the outside make the inside also? In other words, the God that you're so concerned about going through the motions with in the exterior of your life, didn't he make the interior of your life? Now, I know your friends don't see the interior of your life. I know your pastor can't see the interior of your life, but I see it. God sees it. Jesus says, I know what's going on there. God made the interior as well as the exterior. Here's what you do, verse 41. Give alms of those things that are within, and behold, everything is clean for you. Now, think about that. Give alms. Here's the problem in their heart. According to verse 39, they're greedy. Now he says, you want to give? Because he's about to say in verse 42 that they're giving, you know, even the tenth of their herb garden, but inside they're full of wickedness. Now, in our case, in Christianity, you're giving a part of your back window of your minivan to God stuff. You're giving your Sunday mornings to church. You're giving your October 31st to serve at your church's festival. You're doing all these things and sacrificing in the external. You're willing to offer parts of your schedule to God, part of your money to God, part of your effort to God. But have you given him the internal part of you? Have you given as alms the things that are within? No, those things are gross. Those things are in opposition to God. Those things, they're not something God would want. We got to deal with that. Until you're able to give the interior of your life to God, everything's not clean for you. As a matter of fact, the unclean interior invalidates the clean, quote unquote, exterior. It becomes something that really is no good to God at all. As a matter of fact, he'll look at the songs that you sing in worship and he'll say, it's noise to me. I wish you'd stop. What we're looking for in this text is the interior to be transformed.
Examining our hearts rather than leaning on externals. That's the goal today on Focal Point as Pastor Mike Fabares continues his study in Luke 11 titled, Obstacles on the Road to Christ. You know, in a world that's focused on appearances, God's Word cuts straight to the heart. That's why at Focal Point, we're committed to teaching directly from Scripture in a way that's straightforward and accurate, never changing or watering down the message. And when you support this ministry, you help us continue to be a beacon of truth. The support of generous listeners like you helps us stay on the radio and web, anchoring men and women across the nation in God's unchanging Word. And you're invited to join this mission. To give today, simply call 888-320-5885. To show our thanks for your generous support, we've picked out a resource titled, Do Angels Really Have Wings? And 199 Other Questions About God, Life, and the Bible. This book covers everything from deep theological questions like, do Christians and Muslims worship the same God? To lighter questions like the one in the title. And it also deals with some really practical questions. For instance, should Christians go on strike? Or how do I respond to a family member living in a sinful lifestyle? This book is interesting and entertaining, and it'll give you new confidence in your knowledge of the Bible. Be sure to ask for a copy when you donate today. Ask for Do Angels Really Have Wings when you call 888-320-5885 or go to focalpointradio.org. And again, I just want to express our deep thanks for your partnership. When you give, you're expressing your support for this kind of direct, unapologetic Bible teaching. And you're reaching the world for Christ. So thank you. If you'd like to mail your donation, write to Focal Point, Post Office Box 2850, Laguna Hills, California, 92654. Well, I'm your host, Dave Drewy, inviting you to join us tomorrow for our standing appointment in the Pastor's Study. We'll be sitting down with Pastor Mike to answer another relevant question from a listener like you. So be sure to be listening Friday to Focal Point. Today's program was produced and sponsored by Focal Point Ministries.